Hello, everybody. This is the Friendly Bear Podcast, where we interview some of the best and brightest traders in the trading community. Listen to inspiring stories and nuggets of insight from current and future game changers in the trading space. Listen and learn as we explore all types of trading niches with some of the best in the industry from a Friendly Bear point of view. Make sure to check out the Friendly Bear Podcast's new YouTube channel called Friendly Bear Research, which includes all the podcast video content and supplemental screen shares. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. With that being said, I'm your host, David, aka Reverse Long, and this is the Friendly Bear Podcast. Let's dive in.
What's up, guys? This is David, aka Reverse Long, and today I have the pleasure of having Will Frazier on the podcast. Will Frazier is a former bond trader, math coach at Buchholz High School in Gainesville, Florida, where I went to college at. Gainesville is the town where University of Florida is at, and a great town. I have a lot of cool memories from there when I was there during the Tim Tebow era in football, which is wild. It's a whole nother topic in itself. But Will Frazier is a former bond trader, and I got aware of Will's story through a friend of mine that's trading with me every day. And he shot this article to me about a former bond trader turned math teacher. And I was like, wait a second, that's in Buchholz High School. That's in Gainesville, where I'm very familiar with the whole town. And I reached out to Will to find out more about his story, because that article, I think, was from Bloomberg. And he has a couple of stuff floating around online. I thought it was such an interesting story, how someone that can become very successful in the financial markets and then switch to teaching. And what also I found it interesting too, because personally for me, I used to tutor a lot before I actually learned. I kind of have the reverse story of Will. So I started teaching and then went to trading, but I really love teaching. I was a substitute teacher, and I would tutor massively math as well as I was learning how to trade. So anyway, I think it'll be a really cool podcast, especially to get Will's story. Will's got an incredible story. I'm pretty sure, everyone. It's great to hear the stuff like this. So with all that being said, what's up, Will? How's it going?
Everything's good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Okay, so let's start over here. So now, did I get that all correct? Okay, so you're a math coach at Buchholz, and you guys do like competitions. And you guys place pretty well, from what I understand, like from my research.
Yeah. We enter lots of different competitions. We've won 15 of the last 17 state championships, 14 of the last 15 national Mu Alpha Theta championships. We enter a lot of competitions because some schools don't enter certain ones, so we have to go find them in different formats. I could spew out some others we do, but we do a lot of different ones because they all are a little different. They require different knowledge, different skill sets. So we want our kids, able to do anything. So we do enter a lot of a wide variety of competitions.
Wow. So you guys are really, really good at math. Okay. I got you. I got it. Real math whiz. All right. So with bond trading, so you came in with the math background. Before starting the podcast, you mentioned you went to UF also. So like, were you always heavily focused in math? Did you study math? And did that like, was that how you entered, to begin your bond trading career?
Yeah, I was really good at it as a kid. My dad was like a phenom. So it was in the gene pool. I was really good. I loved it. We didn't have near the competitive structure back in the caveman days when I was around. But I loved it. I was a math major at UF. I switched about halfway through. I was a little panicked. What was I going to do with it? In hindsight, I would have liked to have stayed with it. And it was the summer before my senior year. I was majoring in accounting, and I found that pretty boring. So I was kind of like hoping to get a summer internship, and I was quite lucky. I got an internship at Lazard Frere, which was a phenomenal place to get an internship. Most of the kids in the summer program were from the fancier schools. You know, not a lot of UF kind of people in there. So that was good. My uncle had a big investment firm, Fraser Lanier, in Alabama. So it was in the gene pool and in the family. I went up there for that summer internship, the summer before my senior year. And I was hopping around from department to department, which they were doing with the interns. And man, when I hit the trading areas, I just fell in love with that. And I asked the partner in charge of that, the municipal area at the time, you know, if I could spend the rest of the summer with him and his department. And by the end of the summer, you know, we had hit it off and he had promised me a job the following year when I graduated. So that's how I got into it. And I loved it.
So that was, you got into bond trading specifically, right? Was it anything else before that? Any other like instrument?
No, not really. I mean, at Lazard, when I was there, the municipal area was kind of small. So, you know, the traders did underwriting. We interacted with investment bankers on the deal side, you know, even a tad bit of institutional sales. But for me, predominantly, it was trading and a decent bit of underwriting as well, but trading mainly.
And this is before the computers were heavily involved and all that, right?
So yeah, everything was done by hand. Old school. Yeah, I was. I'm 63. So that my summer internship was 79. And I showed up 1980, which, you know, if you look in the history of interest rates, there probably was no better time in history than to show up right around the year I showed up, because, you know, interest rates were constantly rising. You know, Volcker was, you know, coming along and raising them, and you had double digit inflation. But all that was about to turn, you know. So, you know, the 80s, you know, any idiot could look good as a bond trader in the 80s. You didn't, you know, we all thought we were pretty smart, but in really, you know, the market just was always going up, you know. So it was a great time to get into the trading. And so I was quite fortunate in that sense as well.
Wow. So, you know, so yesterday, exactly, the day before, I had a podcast with Chris Cady and Steve Hammer. They're both, Cady was a Chicago floor trader, and Steve Hammer, he has a business and accounting background, and he got into trading. Now he does this whole high frequency trading kind of like software thing. But anyway, they were talking about the 87 crash at one point in the podcast. Did you have any experiences with the crash?
You know, that was just, I left right before that. Not, you know, it wasn't like I had great, you know, sight into it. I did a little bit of trading on my own in the 90s, more for mental stimulation than the goal of making money. But I mostly avoided the, you know, I wasn't full-time employed at the time. And I also was not invested in stocks. So I was kind of negative at the time.
Oh, okay.
So I was able to avoid that, which was good, because when I left Wall Street, and I wasn't there terribly long. I mean, I had saved up a decent enough of money to live a good middle-class life. Let's put it that way. But since I wasn't earning any income, I really had all my money in bonds because I needed interest, you know, to live off of. And the munis at the time when I left, they were still paying, you know, 7-8% tax-free at the time. So, you know, I had almost all my money in the bond market when the stocks crashed there in 87. So that worked out well for me.
Gotcha. So you were out already of the markets before 87.
Just barely. Yeah.
In general.
I left. I was there almost 7 years. I left in 87, but before, you know, October 19th or whatever.
Great. And okay, so back to math. So how did math factor in with all of was that like your biggest edge? Like you were just a math whiz and it provided a lot, because this is like before computers and before, you know, all that. So like, how did that play into your success in the markets?
I thought it was, huge advantage. When I was a tiny kid, my granddad had me playing poker, and he was teaching me elementary probability, you know, how to assess risk. He always made me play for money, and my grandmother used to yell at him because he would keep my money, but he was also teaching the lesson of, you know, your actions have consequences. You better think about your decision. So, yeah, to me, it was a lot of probability, assessing risk. I was a big time card player before coming to New York. I was in the dormitories constantly playing, you know, all nighters. I do think a lot of the calculations and like you said, before, you know, computers were heavily used. A lot of it was pattern recognition that you do a lot of in math, and remembering things that happened in the past and how it played out. Making calculations, comparing various bonds to other bonds. You know, in munis, unlike governments, you know, the credits are, you know, they're not all the same. So there's a lot more extra stuff I think went in the muni area. The probability side of it, statistics, you know, just, you know, we recorded a lot of data just on pencil and paper. Like you said, it was, trying to remember what things it sold for in the past and what spreads were, and making calculations. Even with the underwriting, you know, the formulas for determining which underwriting group would win, you know, these net interest costs, total interest costs, you got to have some idea in your head what little changes in your underwriting bid, how that would impact your overall. And so, you know, a lot of that was raw kind of approximate calculations in your head. So, yeah, the math was hugely important. Most of the guys that I worked with had good, strong math backgrounds as well.
Gotcha. It's so interesting to hear all that, how things used to be, like, you know, you had to be on the spot, like with pen and paper, and just like, you know, calculating and thinking about the probability and the pattern and the risk, and using your imagination and pattern recognition skills together, everything combined. And these days, you know, we have the computer to help us out, but back then you had to be extra sharp. So yeah, it's just really, really interesting. So how did you get involved with teaching? How did that come about?
Yeah, that was a kind of funny story. So when I left in 87, I was just playing basketball, playing golf. I went out and bought a Ferrari, a little treat for myself, and kind of chasing the ladies. I didn't have a real plan. And, you know, it was a good life for 4 or 5 years. I was starting to get antsy. By then I was in my early 30s, and I'm like, what am I going to do the rest of my life? And so I started volunteering at the high school. I was a high school golf coach, two different high schools, and I was doing that. So I started interacting with kids, and I enjoyed teaching golf, but I also just enjoyed, you know, teaching anything. And so one day we got a new principal, and the school had an academy of finance. So I went to him. At this point, it's 10 years later almost. This is 96. I went to the guy and Thanksgiving and said, hey, you know, I'm bored. I see you got this finance academy. I'll teach a class, on bond trading, finance, Wall Street, you know, macroeconomics, all that kind of stuff. And he said, well, you know, let me think about it. Come back at Christmas. So I came back 2 or 3 weeks later, and he said, how about math? And, you know, I was like, well, to me, finance is applied math. I liked math, obviously, and I was kind of bored. And, you know, I thought he was talking about August of the following year when school started. Well, I didn't know this. We had a teacher quitting on him in January. He needed somebody quick. He was desperate. And I kind of agreed to do it, but I told him, hey, if I'm not having fun, I'm walking. So Very first day I go into that class with all those kids, that's what I said. I said, listen, I got plenty of money. I don't need to work. If you guys give me 1 second of hell or grief, I'm walking. And luckily, the previous situation wasn't real good. So they were, anything I did, the bar was low. So they loved me because I met the low bar. And I loved them. It was like instantly fun. And that was January of 97. I just loved it right away. So that's how I got into it.
That's pretty awesome, man. You know, I love to hear that. You know, it's like when I went to high school in Miami, and I grew up financially illiterate, man. You know, I went to public school. It's a shame, you know what I'm saying? To hear that Buchholz, I'm assuming that was Buchholz you were at the whole time. Or were you at other schools?
Yeah, I was. I graduated Buchholz in 1976, and then
Okay.
Yeah, I went there, and it was fun to go back coaching the golf. So I was the golf coach there for, I don't know, 4 years maybe before I started teaching, then I quit coaching golf once I started coaching math. All my friends told me I was a big loser. Who gives up coaching golf to coach math? Only a big nerd. I gave up the golf coach. But yeah, Buchholz was my school. That's where I graduated. And I knew the principal because he was at Buchholz when I was a student there. He was actually my golf coach in high school, as well as the dean there. Now, you know, fast forward, he's the principal. So he hired me, and it was great.
That's great. So you found something that's fulfilling for you, and you're providing so much value to these kids. They're so, you know, it's like, so do they come to you? Like they find out about your math program and all this stuff that you got going on, and they want to, you know, come to you for mentorship or?
Well, one day in 98, my second year teaching, there was a flyer in my box for a math competition. And I went and got my best, at the time I was teaching mostly Algebra 2 honors. So these were like the best ninth graders in my school. I went and asked like the best kids, hey, you want to go to this competition? We got a bus. We went to we thought we were like really good, you know, oh man, we're great, you know, and we went there and got slaughtered. We were last place. And on the way home, the kids started asking me, hey, Ms. Frazier, how do we do this? How do we do that? And it was a lot of stuff that wasn't in our classroom. It was well above the classroom math. And truthfully, I didn't know how to do some of it because I hadn't really trained myself to do it. I knew I could. I just had to, you know, kind of look at it and get some practice. But the kids said, hey, can we practice and enter again? And at that point, I started trying to kind of recruit the best students in town because we had good high schools. Eastside High School had the IB program, and a lot of the great kids were going there. And we were competing to try to get the kids to come to Buchholz or stay at Buchholz. So I started recruiting, and the better we did, the more the kids found me, you know. So it was tough initially convincing them that, you know, we were doing things that would benefit them. And I'm extremely competitive. I think, you know, you can't be a bond trader unless you're kind of crazy competitive, right? The culture of Wall Street is so competitive, as you know. And I told the kids the same thing. I said, I don't want to do this unless we practice to start winning, because I don't like being last at anything. So we started out at the bottom. We studied, you know, just like on Wall Street, you maybe study people who are better at something than you. What do they do? How do they do it? I was looking at the schools at the top, trying to learn from them, and then try to identify flaws in their model. You know, what could I do to copy them? And then what could I do to improve on their models? And so early on, I was constantly tweaking the model. And I was fortunate. I had my first two principals particularly were incredibly supportive. They gave me a lot of flexibility to you know, get creative, get out of the box and do things that benefited the kids. So Ron Nelson, Joan Longstreth, both were incredible. And that made a big difference.
Awesome. Are you familiar with like Ed Thorpe and Ed Thorpe's Kelly Criterion strategy?
I recognize the name, but I'm not familiar with his strategy.
Yeah, the reason why I ask is I have his book. I have yet to get to it, by the way. It's all high level math in it, and it's his strategy for betting and for like increasing size. It's like his criteria for increasing size on certain plays and certain reducing sizes. He came up with that strategy based off his like his him beating the dealer in not poker.
Blackjack.
Yeah. So he got banned from Vegas because he was using all these math formulas to beat the dealer. And then they banned him from Vegas and he went into Wall Street. And he's one of the top traders of all time. He's still alive. He's like in his late 90s now.
Definitely recognize the name.
I was just wondering because he's all math, super math whiz. So how about the students? So these days you have like, especially the past couple of years, the stock market, just markets in general, everybody was talking about it. Now it's a little bit less because now we're approaching like a bear market. But like I remember towards the end of my tutoring career, like in 2020, kids were asking me nonstop about crypto, about stocks, about markets and all this stuff. So, and they were interested, like when I was studying the basics, and I would bring my material. All right. So Will, so, you know, the past couple of years have been really crazy with the markets and, you know, a lot of people were interested in markets that didn't know about it before. And I know for myself, like in 2020, when I, towards the end of my tutoring career, I used to bring some material, along sometimes, throughout my tutoring sessions. Of like to study, and the kids would ask me about like crypto or about the meme stocks or stock market in general, and we're all, you know, everybody all curious with it, and they would open up like simulation accounts sometimes that their parents would give them, and they would, you know, they would experiment, and you know, so are the reason why I bring that up is because like are the kids aware that you coach of your financial bond trading background and all that crazy success you had and like how you came across teaching from like all that success to like now, are they aware of the whole timeline, the story?
Oh, big time. I mean, it's a cool selling point. And, you know, the students, when I first started, most of the math team competitors are Asian. And so I'd say 75% of the kids you run into in a math competition are Asian, whether it's Chinese, Indian, Korean. And most of those students, you know, we're going into medicine, PhD, research. And but over time, the number heading to Wall Street and finance started to grow. In fact, a lot of the parents were getting upset because they wanted their kid to be a PhD instead of, you know, rushing off to Wall Street for money. Over time, the parents, I think, came very supportive of it. So I do send a lot of the math teamers, most of them have very good computer skills. So I got a lot of them now that are, you know, on Wall Street and financial stuff. And I do think just the regular kid, GameStop was it to me. I mean, you mentioned crypto and the memes, but I remember GameStop, particularly my son. You know, I got a 16-year-old teenage boy, and like most 16-year-olds, he didn't want to interact with dad too much. But he got into the whole GameStop and he got interested and he started asking questions. We started having kind of a father-son moment. So I convinced him, instead of trading stocks, to trade commodity futures. So we opened up, you mentioned open up a, you know, account and do some phantom trading. Open up a real account with TD Ameritrade and put a chunk of money. And, you know, he and I did it initially and I was coaching him up. And, you know, after a while, I just passed it to him. So all the decisions he makes. Now, we talk every day, you know, I tell him my opinion, but he's welcome to throw it out and use it or chunk it. So, I do think my personal math kids have been interested in Wall Street because they know my story. They love it. You know, when you're a teenage boy with no money, you know, and you see some guy talking about, you know, making enough money at 27 and walk away, they get pretty excited. When you're that age, money is huge. It's been interesting watching the transition as more and more kids go into financial careers and particularly trading.
Absolutely, man. So I don't know. So, Will, it's been so great to have you on the podcast and know your whole story and to get more, because when I tried to dig into your story, there was really no in-depth about your history with bond trading and how far you go with teaching. Cause this is, it's some really good stuff that you're doing, and the success from the math program. You said they graduate to go on to other things, sometimes get recruited by Wall Street or something, you know? So that's big. That's huge. So it's really good. Thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast and share all that. I think it's great.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Will. And yeah, I'll keep tabs on your math performance that Buchholz does, you know, see how they place in the Nationals and all that. That'd be kind of cool.
Okay. So, yeah. Maybe we can hook up again sometime.
Absolutely. And maybe I might need an intern to run some algo testing, some algorithmic trading and stuff. So, yeah, I'll reach out to you.
I got plenty that would fight for that job.
Okay. Yeah. That's going to be interesting. So, I'm serious about that, by the way.
Okay. I'm serious, too.
Okay. All right, Will. Well, you have a great rest of your day, and we'll keep in contact. Thanks for coming on.
All right, Bob. Thank you. Bye.
That concludes today's episode. Make sure to like and subscribe to the channel on the platform you use. The Friendly Bear Podcast is hosted by me, David, where you can find me on Twitter at @reverse_long. You can find the Friendly Bear Podcast at www.thefriendlybearpodcast.com, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and now on YouTube at Friendly Bear Research. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Friendly Bear Podcast.